platform.
Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hey, hello folks. This is Dave Gahari, and you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. It's 602. Thank you, Elizabeth. PM Central Time. And it is, I think it's hot all around the country. So I think that's what happens in the summertime, right? It gets hot. Yeah. So there are places way north from where Dave and I are that are much hotter than we are right now. So we're only in the high 80s. But Virginia is in the hundreds, I heard, and other places, I think even further north than that. I really don't follow the weather that much, but from what I've heard. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We're on speakfreeradio.com, and today is June 23rd, which is pretty amazing. June's almost gone. It was, you know, it was just January, and it was just 2024. Now we're almost to the end of June, which means that's the end of the second quarter. That's halfway through 2024, and we're going to then be closer to 2025 than we are to 2024. It's incredible. I don't get it. All I know is we have to keep moving the ball down the field because we're running out of time. So I will actually, neither Dave nor I will be here next Sunday. Dave has something going on, and I have something going on. So I don't know what we're going to play. Maybe an old show, maybe a one of Dave's shows for those 2 hours. So there won't be any live calls. I'm sure there will still be people trying to come in, but nothing will happen. So let me tell you about the show. It's a call-in show. This is for the new listeners. And anyone can call in from all over the world. Of course, you can't call in yet, like on a phone number. That's going to change too, though, because we're creating a whole new system. And the tech geniuses behind the scenes, primarily a tech genius behind the scenes, is taking care of that. And SFR, Speak Free Radio, is going to rebrand to FTJ Media. So you could, decide what FTJ stands for. That's up to you. It could be freedom, truth, justice. It could be fuck the Jew. It could be whatever you want it to be. So FTJ Media will be coming into place next month. And it's going to be a very powerful platform. And besides, obviously, the name and a new logo and new commercials and stuff. There's going to be a lot of new stuff. So I think you're really going to like it. So anyone from, and the reason I mention that is because we're going to have call-in numbers. So regular phone numbers that people can call into shows. So right now we're limited primarily, although a few hosts like Giuseppe, he has a Skype number that people call in on. But we're going to have our own studio number where folks will be able to call into all the shows. So now you have to go to speakfreeradio.com, go to the call and chat tab, and then click on the associated logo for the show that you're looking to call into, and you come into the studio, and that's the way to do it now. But starting next month, we're going to have a regular U.S. phone number where anybody can call from all over the world. And that's what happens now. I don't know if it'll be an 800 number. It probably will not be, because 800 numbers don't work from overseas. Like I said, you're going to really enjoy what we're rolling out. And anyone can call from all over the world, or in this case, they can come into the studio and ask Dr. David Duke a question. He has a we say 2 minutes to respond, but it depends on the load in the studio. And it depends on the topic. So it might go longer, than 2 minutes, and it might not. Close to that 2 minute mark, you'll hear this sound. And then on the 2 minute mark, you'll hear it again. And that means we have to move to the next call. Sometimes we have to do it faster than other times because of that load in the studio waiting room. And as always, our ongoing challenge, which has never been met, is that if anyone can let us know of a more significant threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, or as David would say, Jewish supremacy, a term he coined that is now gaining prominence because the rest of the world is catching up with him, let us know and we'll quit the show. Also, if you let us know of a more effective deliverer of that message about Jewish supremacy other than Dr. David Duke, let us know and we'll quit. And that's the truth. And you know, I was thinking about this earlier today, and actually over the last couple of days, because Patrick from one of the engineers at SFR sent me a video of David where he was debating in the Senate debate with the other candidates, including John Kennedy, who's serving in the Senate now. Anyway, it's a YouTube link that he put together years ago, and he put it together for the purpose of he took the clips out of that video, out of the full debate, for the purpose of showing how the quote-unquote moderator did not really do his job. Well, he did his job. He did a number on Dave. If you go to that YouTube video, and I'll drop it in the chat, it doesn't let you watch the YouTube video before you click where it says the following content. This is a freaking debate that was aired on television or cable. It was a debate. And there's nothing pornographic in there. I mean, look at what the Jews are putting out. They don't put that up there. You could see all this filth on this piece of shit YouTube. But this debate that David's in, and this is how they control the message, and they contain the message that they don't want to get out. The following content has been identified by the YouTube community, like what the fuck is that, as inappropriate or offensive to some audiences. And then it says, I understand and wish to proceed. You know, like you're about to see like somebody raped, right? Well, you are. David raped the moderator. So there is the link. I put it in the chat. And anyway, David kicked the shit out of this moderator. And which he always does, because they try to contain him and they will not let him deliver his message. And I've seen this before, just like he kicked the shit out of that Jew spy who's on CNN. I think that piece of shit is still on CNN. Wolf Blitzer, who was an editor, I think, for the Jerusalem Post. This piece of filth is in the United States here, you know, spewing the Jew message, the Jewish supremacist message. He kicked the shit out of him, too. And they can't fight back, because what can they say? But what I was thinking about when I was watching it and thinking about it over the past couple of days is, you know, David obviously has his detractors, and most of them are the ignorant, unwashed masses, the goyim. But even within our own community, he has his detractors. You know, people who, like the people who call up sometimes and say, you know, nasty things to him, or people who just don't like him or think he might, you know, hog the stage and talk too much and not give other people a chance to talk. Whatever the case may be, I don't think that there has been another individual in our group, if we can call it that, who has advanced as high as he has in regards to gaining the attention of the mainstream. As a matter of fact, I know that. There isn't anyone. So he has been a representative in the Louisiana House. He won that election. He has ran for other offices, national offices as well. That's what I was talking about, this Senate debate. So he's somebody who not only knows the material, but has written books on it and given lectures on it and given lectures in universities all around the world. But he's somebody who's reached close to the pinnacle of in the political arena of this country. And I'm sure that they manipulated the elections that he didn't win, because that's what they do. We saw it in 2020 on full display. So this guy, you know, is pretty amazing. And, you know, regardless of, like I said, you know, his detractors are, I mean, he's only human. We all have faults, obviously. But he's done so much. And I just happened to be listening to a clip of his last show. Well, not a clip, but the show, the beginning of the show. I made a clip out of it. It's a very short clip. It's just the beginning, where he had Mark Collette on, who's a patriot in the United Kingdom, who, you know, tries to rally the troops there, patriotic alternative. And Mark came to that same understanding when, as we know, last week, David wasn't here. He was flying from Detroit, and thank goodness he made it home safely, considering that these airlines are now hiring people based on, you know, parameters other than merit or, you know, technical qualifications, but, you know, like skin color, that's really important. You know, let's see, you can't fly, but, well, you're the right skin color, sir, you're hired. That's great. So Mark realized, you know, he came to that conclusion too, because he saw when David was in Detroit, there was a flurry of activity around him, a lot of interviews, and he did like several hour interviews, and even the obviously the Jews media paid attention to him, and they fear him. And obviously the reason they fear him is because he can deliver that message properly, and they're beginning to acknowledge that he coined the term Jewish supremacism, and they're using it now. So when he was in Detroit and the Jews media got wind of it, and the Jews got wind of it, they started to do the hit pieces on him. And of course they keep going back to that damn KKK nonsense. And you know, really, the KKK obviously was an organization that, you know, tried to fight against the encroachments of the Jew in the South. And so, you know, any real American should be behind the KKK, you know, not the Jewish, you know, rendition of it in their media. But Mark Collette had seen an article that was put out to smear David. And I'm just going to play the beginning, the very beginning of that Friday's broadcast on David's program, which is hrradio.net, I believe. Okay, let me play it here.
Of course, my favorite show of the week, my favorite guest of the week, even though we have a lot of great guests.
Wait a minute, David. I think we need to rename today's show.
Okay.
Do you know what we should rename it to?
Please.
Instead of it being the David Duke Show, it should be called the Goat Show. And that's not because you're a horny mountain climber, but because you clearly are the greatest of all time. You are still making headlines the world over well into your 70s. And the other day, when I saw your cheeky little grin in Detroit, and I read the headlines, I took to my social media in absolute delight. I don't know whether you've seen this headline. but those Israelis are in an absolute flap over you. This is from Israel National News. Ex-KKK leader David Duke sides with anti-Israel protests. White supremacist and anti-Semite says he supports anyone working against Jewish supremacy. Claims we're being genocided like the Palestinians. That quote went viral the world over.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I woke up and saw this news. And of course it's true. Phenomenal. It's true. And actually, I even the whole quote, if it had been reported accurately, completely.
I put the whole quote on my social media as well, so everyone could see the video.
A little different than that. We're being genocided as like in Palestine. However, it's a different form. It's a different form of it, but it's the same destruction of our people.
Yes, and that was the clip. That was the beginning of the show. And anybody can go to hrradio.net, humanrightsradio.net, so hrradio.net, and listen to the remainder of the broadcast. So let me just say this before I bring David aboard. To the folks, to the detractors, he's still banned on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. There's a reason he's banned. The Jews don't want him on there. And Musk won't put him back. And there's a reason. Because the Jews fear him. So the next time somebody wants to criticize him for whatever reason, before you do that, I want to know if the Jews fear you. I doubt it. They fear this guy, though, and they should. And he's a nice guy. I'm not a nice guy, but he's a nice guy. And they fear this nice guy because, obviously, they know what he can do. He could rally the troops. Still, and that's what Mark was saying, the guy's in his 70s. Not that that's old, but he's in his 70s, and he's still getting front page headlines. Because the time is here. The time is now, right, Dave?
It sure is. It is right here, right now. We're seeing a tremendous shift in the world that we've been working on to create. And this has been a project that's been going on for decades in my life. It's been going on since I was a young teenager. And this is my dream, to get the world awakened to the greatest threat to everyone in the world, every European person, of course, but also every person in the Middle East, every person in Africa, every person in Asia, every person in the Americas, all the people of the world, because the greatest threat to this world is Jewish supremacism and Jewish tyranny and the Jewish destruction of the sovereign mind. I got a couple of comments to make myself before we start. If you could give me a couple of minutes here, a few minutes. It's not going to take long. But you mentioned the fact I've been banned from Twitter. And the question is, I really have for people, why have I, one of the most, in fact, I'm going to write this for an article for our platform pretty soon that I'm working to breach. And why have I, one of the most known political voices in America and across the world, David Duke, why have I been banned by Twitter after the Zionist extremist ADL made me the number one target in the world to be silenced on Twitter? I think I can answer the question of why I was made the number one target of the ADL to be censored. And I want to share with you what one pundit wrote just the other day. Listen to this. These are interesting words. This is what he wrote. The four top most known voices in the world that the powerful Jewish Zionist advocacy organization, that's what it is, the ADL, demanded Twitter to ban were David Duke. This is a certain time in history, of course, but it was a couple years ago. Kanye, Alex Jones, Andrew Tate, and Nick Fuentes. All have been reinstated by Twitter, except one. The same man that's listed by the ADL as their number one target, David Duke. Why? Ironically, the reason why David Duke is the number one target of the ADL is because he has been one of the most read and listened to adversaries and critics of both the ADL and what Duke calls the Jewish supremacist state of Israel. He has been an outspoken voice from the beginning of this current massacre and genocide in Gaza against this Jewish genocide. The term Jewish supremacism that David Duke created and popularized in the 1990s and was used in his autobiography, My Awakening, and in 2007, Duke wrote a book with that title, Jewish Supremacism, has now been adopted, by critics of Israel across America and the world. It is used by leading Jewish human rights organizations, even in Israel, Beth Salem, along with leading human rights organizations across the world, such as Amnesty International and Genocide Watch. It is used by almost all the academic and prominent critics of Israel, such as Norman Finkelstein, and thousands of others, such as Max Blumenthal, Aaron Matte, Katie Helper, and many others. The term is used in Israel's oldest and one of its most prominent daily newspapers. In fact, it is the oldest published daily in Israel. It's Eretz. And it's one of the most important newspapers in Israel and maybe in the world because it does expose a lot of the Jewish crimes that are going on. He goes on, Duke, whose books have been read by millions in a couple of dozen languages, including most of the European languages, as well as many others, including Arabic all over the world and in Russian, where it was actually sold in the Russian Duma, the Russian Congress. At the time, Duke shared research with Nobel Prize winner Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And it was published by the largest university in Ukraine, where Duke taught and earned a doctorate in history. His doctoral thesis was titled, Israel is a Jewish supremacist state created by global Zionist power and influence. Over the years, Duke has lectured. It goes on, but now I'm going to take my voice to this. Over the years, I've lectured in hundreds of colleges, at thousands of meetings, and been interviewed by the leading journalists in the world. I've been on Meet the Press 3 times. I've been on French television, Canadian television programs, participated in the biggest nationally televised debate on affirmative action ever with Black leader Joe Hicks in California, right before the constitutional amendment in California was put on the ballot and voted upon. The NBC News Channel in Los Angeles, just after, it was after the debate was announced, but then it was reported right after the debate, which took place only a few days before the vote. But it reported, and they admitted, that the vote was tied in California. But after this biggest debate, which was aired live to the entire state and the nation on the eve of the Proposition 209 amendment, the vote went 10% higher after this debate. So obviously we had a big impact and we won that debate and we won the only constitutional amendment that defended the rights of all people, including white people. So I was elected and served in the House of Representatives. I've been accepted as a member of the Republican caucus. My bill for true equal rights in Louisiana was the only bill passed in any elected legislative body in the United States that protected whites from racial discrimination in the so-called affirmative action programs. In the state of Louisiana, I won 65% of the white vote, including Republicans and Democrats, to unseat the sitting Republican governor. In the governor's race, I was endorsed for governor proudly by one of the most famous Black civil rights figures in America, James Meredith. And as a side note, he stated on the program that he believed I would be good for white people, but he believed I would be the best candidate for Black people, that I would get the drugs out of the, you know, out of the housing projects and try to restore a decent life for them because the programs and policies of the government was increasing Black illegitimacy and causing black kids to grow up with fathers, and that David Duke was an answer for these things. So every day of my life, I find myself viciously attacked on platforms like Twitter by thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of tweets. My name's used incessantly as a way to demonize good people for good causes by saying that in that platform that that my speech is the same speech that somebody else has, therefore they're evil because I must be evil. So why am I, the most prominent person in the world on these subjects, not allowed to defend myself? My answer to that is, you know, I was on Twitter for 10 years, and although shadow banned relentlessly, still have many days with tens of millions of tweet reads. I've never advocated or defended any kind of violence whatsoever. In fact, I've condemned any type of political, racial, religious, or ethnic violence. I've bred that it is the worst of immorality. But not only that, I'm not a self-proclaimed white supremacist. I've never been such. What I am is a human rights activist, and that means I want to defend the human rights of all peoples in the world, including my own people, that have been ethnically replaced in the leadership in the elite of America. And it's because of that ethnic replacement of white people that white people have suffered in America in so many ways, but also the reason why the Palestinians are suffering right now, a genocide. That's just a little opening statement I wanted to make today in light of what you were playing with Mark Collett, and I hope you enjoyed that.
I did, Dave. I did. And thank you for everything you've done. And I was just thinking while you were talking, imagine if you were born in the 1800s. You would not even be noticed, really. Right? I mean, that's true.
Sure.
You would be just like everybody else. Yeah. It's crazy when you think about it, that if you fast forward somebody's personality from another era, how that era that they're in now reacts to them. And I think, I know, it's all the Jew, because folks, whether they're white or black, obviously, they don't have any problem with you. It's the kike control of the media that does it. Dave, we have a caller from the UK.
Right.
And we're gonna get her to her first, because it's
call,
it's
like
late there. Yeah.
Before we get to that call, I'd like to make one comment on what you said there, just to
yes.
begin the show. And that is, you're right. I would have. And when I was growing up, I had a dream to be an astronaut, like so many kids at that time. I was very scientifically oriented. And I wanted to be a person that concentrated like a doctor on the human body in terms of space travel and being an astronaut and all these things. And then I began to realize that it was ridiculous for me to want to pursue any other life's work or career when I realized that I could see it clearly that even though whites were 90% of the population, and I realized there was a war going on against our people to undermine our values, our traditions, our heritage, our freedom, but getting us involved in war after war after war, which was devastating to us economically, devastating to our own young men, wars based on lies. And I realized at that point that my life would have much more meaning for me to act and do what was necessary. So I was a person that noticed things. I noticed the Jewish power. I noticed the threat it was to our survival and to all the people of the world, especially the people of America. But I noticed those things, and I decided that's what I was going to devote my life to, and that's why I'm sitting before you in this program and sitting before the world, hopefully, as much as I can, and express these truths that so few others express. But now it's great and gratifying to see so much of the world understand the truth that I've been speaking for so long, and now beginning to embrace it and using that truth as an incredible intellectual weapon to dislodge and defeat the Jewish supremacists, who are the greatest warmongers, murderers the world's ever seen, both in communism and both what's going on in Gaza and what they're doing in terms of these insane wars we've had for 150 years, in terms of the incredible corruption, economic corruption and robbery of the world like Goldman Sachs, and what they did recently to Malaysia and were convicted.
Yeah, perfect. They have perfect names, don't they? Perfect names.
Yeah, it's like
like Goldman Sachs, like sacks of gold.
Yeah,
can't make it up.
And it's almost like saying, you know, to understand who controls things, this is the biggest criminal bank on earth, and they did a $4.5 billion criminal conspiracy. Yet they interview them on television every day, don't mention it. Every day they mention the fact that I was in a nonviolent Klan group 60 years ago as a young kid, and there was not a single member of my group ever charged or accused of any crime or violence.
And doesn't matter.
We have an organization that's been behind these wars and been behind the complete bankruptcy of a whole country's, along with us, because they committed terrible frauds against us in the meltdown 2008. Along with us,
right.
They caused poverty.
Well, they'll never recognize it.
Right. They've created poverty and suffering to literally millions and millions of Americans. Every drop.
Right, and they just gloss over it and pay attention to somebody like you.
Yeah, because
all right,
they
Dave.
All stick together. It's a Jewish mafia.
Of course.
It makes the mafia look like tiddlywinks compared
absolutely.
To compared 100%. To iron girders in a skyscraper.
keep smashing them, Dave.
Okay.
All right. We got Claire. Claire from the UK.
Hello.
Claire, go ahead. You have the floor.
Thank you. I was watching an E. Michael Jones video, and he happened to mention you. And I was wondering what memory you have of E. Michael Jones and what you think of him.
Well, I appreciate his work against Jewish supremacism and understanding the evil things that they're engaged in. You know, I might have a different view on race. I think race is a reality, that there are different races, and that every race and every people have a right to their identity. And I think every people, including black people, black Arab people, whether they're Greeks or they're Romans, I mean Greeks or Italians today, or Spanish or Germans or French or Slavs or Russians or Scandinavians, or for that matter Chinese, are people from India, are people from the Amerindians, or what they call them, or Native Americans in terms of South America or Central or North America. Everybody, I believe, has this right to preserve their heritage. And in the face of Jewish globalism, which is really an enemy to all of humanity, it's great that he exposes this enemy that Jewish supremacism is, but I think that he should also recognize that race is not a social construct. It's not a social critical theory as described by the Frankfurt School, which is a Jewish school. This is talked about by the Anu, which Anu is a Hebrew word meaning us, we. It's always we for Jews. There's thousands and thousands of Jewish organizations in America, Europe, Great Britain, where you're living, thousands of groups that openly stand up for Jewish interests, interests of Jewish people, brazenly, openly. They're supported by literally billions of dollars of funding and power, plus people who are devoted to their Jewish supremacism in this world and Jewish hegemony in this world are the same Jews, right, who tell us that Europeans don't have a right to live or continue, whether we're British or German or whatever we are. And we do have a right to live. And the reason why the world is suffering under this is not because of white supremacy. We're suffering under Jewish supremacy. We're not even suffering under what they keep talking about when they say to Israel, it's Jewish apartheid. It's not apartheid. Apartheid, literally, if you look at the real definition and what the South Africans were striving for, was a separate development where blacks ran their own society, had their own lands, complete control of their lives, self-determination. Jews in Israel made a law that only Jews can have self-determination. So what we're facing in terms of Jewish hegemony is, it's just like what Desmond Tutu said one time. He said, He said that what's going on in Israel is 1,000 times worse than anything you can allege against South Africa. In fact, I would argue that of all the African states, there was no state that gave blacks more individual freedom, that worked more to give them good education, good hospitals, good care, a good standard of living. In fact, millions of Africans from all over Africa streamed into South Africa to enjoy the jobs, the health care, the educational system that South Africa provided. Jewish communists came in with the ANC, and they took over the country, and they really have sent South Africa into hell. And I think the South Africans were working for self-determination for the African people, but they didn't really get to do that in a controlled and in a good fashion. And what happens now is you have massive unemployment, you have massive crime, and South Africans and whites are victims of this crime on a massive scale. It's night and day, and this is night, it was day, in what South Africa was for the individual lives of black people and the well-being of black families, and really even their exercise of freedom to go before a fair and just court if they were charged with a crime, or to enjoy the benefits of Western civilization. So, I mean, even I'm not defending everything about South Africa. I'm not saying everything was good about it. But Jewish supremacism is an entirely different animal than what white colonial was. Well, the big example is the British. You're a British person. I mean, when British came to India, they didn't try to replace the population. They tried to build it up. They helped the warlords in India stop fighting each other. They built railways which connected the country. They built educational institutions. They built even magnificent buildings of government for them. They inculcated ideas of democratic rule for their people, a fair and just rule for their people. And ultimately, they didn't go kill them all because they wanted independence. They actually got behind it. Same thing is true about things like the institution of slavery. The British Empire and the rest of the world, including the Americas, all recognized that slavery was not an institution to continue on in this world. And they got rid of it on their own. They didn't have to have other countries intervene in there. There were lots of Americans even dedicated to having a horrible war, which is not a war we should have had. We shouldn't have cost American lives, which was certainly bad or anything that slavery would be. But what, Europeans killing one another and causing a terrible destruction of life for both blacks and whites in America, where the war between the states was not a good thing either. Just like the Second World War, whatever people try to say was the good motives of the war, getting into a world war between, say, Britain and France and Germany and Russia, getting in that world war cost between 60 and 80 million lives, most of them civilians, most of them innocent. And when you think about this for a battle, simply for self-determination, the Germans were fighting for self-determination for the people of Danzig who had their own country and spoke German, just like the people of Eastern Ukraine, by the way, speak Russian. And just like this whole war in Ukraine was really started by Jews. It was started by, the Jewish takeover of Ukraine by the Jewish controllers of the United States government and State Department. And the Jewish media were cheerleaders against Russia. Why were they against Russia? Because Russia wasn't communist anymore. And it wasn't controlled by Jews anymore. And then after the Russians overthrew communism, took down the hammer and sickle, and set free all of Eastern Europe, that wasn't enough for the Jews. They had to go in and actually promote expansion of NATO and the dangers of even a nuclear war, which may kill us all. So I'm out of time. That's good. We'll go to the next question. But that's really the fundamental things that I see. And these are the reasons why they want to suppress me, because I think I tell the truth in these issues that are very clear and understandable to anyone.
But may I know what you think of E. Michael Jones and what you remembered of what you discussed?
I like to say positive things about anybody, especially people that expose, what's got to be exposed. So I'm all for E. Michael Jones. I have some disagreements with him a little bit of basically saying he says these crazy things that there's no such thing as white people. Well, just because of the fact that we've also been, we called ourselves French and German and Anglo-Saxon and Irish and Scandinavian, that doesn't mean there's no white people. the European people, we all share a lot of the genes of the European people. And Jews, by the way, share the most genetic, lack of diversity of any people on earth. The average Jew is like a fifth cousin to every other Jew. And I'm talking about the Ashkenazi Jew, even to the Sephardic Jew. They're like fifth cousins to one another. That's how similar their genes are, because they've been inbreeding for so long. And they have the most racial doctrine. The Jewish religion is actually a racial supremacist doctrine, a radical doctrine that preaches not only are the Jews, favored by God over everybody else, and Jews have a right to rule over everybody else, but they also have a deprecation, a hatred for all of humanity. And they believe that Jews have this fundamental right to rule the world over the rest of humanity, which is 99.9% non-white. E. Michael Jones kind of thinks to us that Jews aren't even a race themselves, that there are no races in Europe, and that somehow, Jews can just convert and everything's going to be the same. No, I think the difference between Jews and the non-Jews of the world, I think they're different in terms of their genetic closeness. I think their racial doctrines of the Jewish religion, they always say, the Jewish religion is really great. It's just those Zionists or those secular Jews or those Ashkenazis, that's the bad things. No, the whole Talmud was written by Sephardi Jews long before any alleged Khazar empire conversion. There is a trait, peoples of different races tend to have different traits and different abilities and different cultures that I think are a result of two things: their culture, their traditions, their social structure, their social rules and morals and faiths and so forth. And Jews are different. Now, does that mean they should be suppressed or killed? No. But it doesn't mean that, say, 2% of the population of America being Jewish should be able to completely control campaign funding, should be able to completely control the biggest media of the world, including things like Google, which controls the search engines of the world, the videos of most of the world. No, I don't. I don't believe that's freedom. I don't believe that's correct. I think they should be removed from power. I think, I'm not talking about putting them in camps or killing anybody. I'm talking about, the fact that we Europeans, like every people in the world, have a right to rule ourselves. And the British people have a right to be ruled by themselves, not just by America. It would be bad enough if it was just America. The Americans had a revolution. The idea was that American people should rule themselves, not British, the same as our ancestor overwhelmingly from across the ocean. But we should be able to have a country in our own interest and not to the British Empire's interest. But the interesting thing about Jews are that they're 2% of the population, and they have an innate, they have a long-running hatred of not only Christianity and Jesus Christ and the values of Christian civilization. They have a hatred of European peoples as well as all humanity, which they think they're superior to and better than. And that's the reality of the world. And yet this very, very acute, hateful religious idea and actually secular idea too, because people like Ben Gurion, they were atheists actually. And many of the Zionists, Herzl himself was an atheist Jew, but he was very happy to have a Jewish religious state created where the Jewish religion could control the laws of marriage and immigration, because they demanded racial purity. They demanded that the only immigration could be Jewish. And they were willing to tolerate doctrine of this God that Judaism has, even though that a lot of religious Jews don't even believe in God, because Judaism itself is far more of a racial movement, far more than a racial supremacist movement than it is a religion. And the Talmud, it brings that racial extremism, that racist supremacist extremism, to a point that's beyond anything imaginable. And that's the kind of dramatic hatred that drove the mass murders of communism, which was a Jewish institution. It was a Jewish movement around the world, as your British government decreed. The British government sent a telegram to the United States, the President of the United States, and the American government saying that, quote, this is a long page of a 40-page report. And it was called, you know, the first page of this long report sent to the American government was, there is now definite evidence that international communism is a movement completely controlled and dominated by Jews and is a threat to the entire world. And that's so true. And Karl Marx himself, by the way, had Jewish ancestry, and his father changed his name and became a quote unquote Christian. Now, I do believe that there can be Jews that convert to Christianity, honestly. There can be Jews who change their ways and even condemn Jewish supremacism. But I also understand that the way that Jews teach to their own people is that they have every right to lie and deceive, like the Murano Jews. So when the Murano said, look, we don't like what you're doing. If you want to become a Christian, you can stay. So a lot of them took the baptismal water. But then they, at night, in fact, they have books themselves where they talk about this, that they went to their local church if they're prominent Jews in Spain. But at night, they'd have these Jewish meetings where they would curse Christians and curse Jesus Christ and spit upon his image. I mean, this is real. Now, they themselves say that they did this in their own books and their own documents. And see, that's a problem. So that doesn't mean that I think every Jew that converts is or says he is, but we certainly have to be wary. And I think that we certainly have a right in European countries and Arabic countries have a right to understand the history of these people and the level of duplicity that sometimes can be evidenced by them. I'll close with this quote for this 2 minute sector. He said, quote, you and your fathers are the sons of the devil. This is to the Pharisee. The lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, bode not in truth, because there's no truth in him. He's a liar and the father of it. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his essence. And that's how they wage war. The motto of the Mossad is, by deception, they shall wage war. That's their motto of their media. That's the motto of everything. And maybe in the show we'll talk about some of the lies and the incredible horrors that they're saying the Palestinians committed on October 7th, which there's no evidence for. But they're using these made-up lies about mass rapes of Jewish women to basically justify and promote the mass murder of tens of thousands and the maiming and the torture of tens of thousands of children. Right? Hopefully we'll get into that tonight, because we should talk about this subject, because this is the slaughter that's going on in this world right in front of our eyes. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, Claire. We can get you back in for another question if you're awake.
Yeah, she's smart.
Yes. See,
smart people have smart questions. And, you know, that's how we learn things, too. That's how I learned everything I learned. I started noticing things, and then I started asking questions about that. And I was not satisfied with the answers, because the answers made no sense. When I started seeing the facts on the ground, the real facts, just like October 7th.
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
Okay, well, how can they say Hamas is a terrorist group when there's 36 children that die on that date, right, out of 1,200? But Jews have invaded Gaza for years.
Right, it's just Jew bullshit. It's just Jew bullshit.
2,000 children, right?
Right,
but they're not called terrorists. I mean, that's
exactly
the example,
right. Well, that's their Jews media.
Yeah,
that's their rotting media appendage. We've got another UK caller,
yes.
Richard, our good man.
Hello.
I'm glad to see you,
Dave.
Richard. I just get upset every time I see that pigeon with the pill on it and the ears coming out.
Well, I might be doing something about that. I did share with Gahari earlier. There was a show that I did with a few content creators, Rags and Jacks, talking about the Industrial Revolution. Merry Old England. So hopefully I can change that.
Why don't you
soon.
Put next on put a visage of a heroic, Englishman, say at the Battle of Trafalgar Square or something, rather than
that's right.
rather than a sick pigeon that's kind of drooling from its mouth,
That's right, crying a bit because of the pill being pushed into its brain. Okay, well, I mean, there's quite a few questions I've got for you, Dr. Duke, and I know that time is limited. What was it that most appealed to you about Nicolas Fuentes? Like, he's obviously a figure. I'm not saying that he's better than you, but he's certainly made his name present. And what kind of advice would you give to him, given that I understand from the recording that you gave to Gahari last week that unfortunately the venue either for whatever reason cancelled it, they came down to pressure, and they decided, like, this happens all the time, like, no matter where you are in the world, yeah, they try to stop this from happening. I've got other questions as well, but I guess I will leave with that one. That's my question. Thank you very much, David Duke.
Well, I'll tell you something. Even though somebody might not know this, I guess every leader, every activist, every political person who gets a lot of votes has to have a degree of an ego, has got to believe that he's capable. The athlete needs to believe he can win. And when he goes into the athletic battle or the race or the contest, so you got to have a bit of an ego. But I'll tell you something. I don't really, when it comes to the movement, I don't have a jealous bone in my body. I am very, very happy to see anyone and to work with anyone and support anyone who's doing good work to expose the enemies that are so destructive of our people and all humanity. And Nick Fuentes is a person, and I've seen his evolution as since he began. He began talking first about American First and about white survival, and I agree with all those things, obviously, and the right of us to preserve ourselves from this mass immigration, just as if the Palestinians, just as they did, right? I mean, how can any Palestinian supporter and all the left all will say Palestinians have a right to their self-determination, they have a right to have a society that's in their own image, their own values, their own faith, their own traditions, not be ruled over by people that hate them and despise them, that they have a right to preserve that entity that they are, to have their children like them. But if that's true, obviously I think Europeans have that same right. And Nick Fuentes is for that. But then the hard thing, that's one thing, that's hard to say too, because then they call you a racist because you want to defend the rights of white people. But the real hard thing to do is point out the real racist, because when they call white people racist, it's just nothing more than Jewish projection. When they call Hamas terrorists, that's Jewish projection. When they call white people genociders, that's Jewish projection. I mean, you don't have to do much more than read the Old Testament. And by the way, I'm not criticizing the Old Testament. I'm not criticizing God. But I can tell you this, that I think one mistake sometimes Christians make is they think that everything that was done in the Old Testament was ordained or necessarily done by God, or was the will of God, or that God wanted some certain thing to be done. The truth is that the New Testament and the Old Testament, well, the New Testament especially about this, but the Old Testament goes to great length to say how many times the Jews were not following the word of God, and that they were committing crimes against each other, crimes against God. Remember when God rescued them by this tale from the bondage in Egypt, how they worship false idols and they were doing sodomy on each other, all this stuff, you know, pedestrated. I mean, all this incredible evil. And God said that he was going to wipe them all out. He didn't do that. But, I mean, but you know, it's just, see, just the fact that they wiped out people, and I'm one of these people who knows that over the centuries that some things maybe are in the Bible, maybe shouldn't be. I don't believe that every single translation of the Bible, including up to the Scofield Bible of recent times, which I know are very stilted toward Jews, I don't believe they were inspired by God. I do believe that there are certain elements of the Bible that are magnificent, and I do believe that the Bible and the spirit that I follow more than anything else, the divine, the ultimate arbiter, I think, of my faith, obviously, as a Christian, are the words and the actions of Jesus Christ and his direct disciples. And what Jesus Christ taught was the golden rule extended to all people. That's the difference between the Old Testament and the New. And even Christ himself summarized it, that I believe in the golden rule, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And that by Jesus' teaching, and he made it clear in so many examples, like going to the Samaritan well and drinking after them and supporting them, and the apostles talking about going to the Gentiles. Jews don't want to go to Gentiles. They don't want to live around Gentiles. They think Gentiles are dirty creatures, not even human beings, really. That's really what Jews have been preaching. They became more and more radical over the years. So I believe, I like the idea that we're going to treat people respectfully. I don't think we should go to war against other people, steal their lands or enslave them or hurt them or harm them or massacre them or genocide them. And I do believe that babies are innocent, that children are innocent. And I don't see anything in the New Testament where Jesus Christ would endorse the killing of a child or killing of an infant, a suckling infant. Now, maybe people think it's said in the Old Testament that was a commandment of God. I'm not sure that it was. And I think when Jesus came, he gave us directly, the Son of God was coming to the earth to give us directly what he was trying to convey from God to the people who believed in God. And that conception of God that Jesus Christ offered was a God of love, kindness, and peace, like the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the peacemakers. It's funny, they portray people like me and you, black pigeon-pilled, and other people, David Harry, like we're really evil people because we oppose these Jewish racist warmongering supremacists, right, and criminals, and pornographers, and all the rest of the things that they do so terribly. They portray us as bad people. But it's just amazing to think of the fact that we've not hurt anybody. We've not killed anybody. We've not supported any genocides against anybody. We don't support any such thing. And we would condemn any genocide from anyone. We commit any crimes. We would certainly condemn any crimes that any Gazans would commit against Israeli citizens. We do understand why those things happen, because when you're killing your own people, when your fathers and mothers are being killed and your kids are being raped and murdered in the prisons of Israel, as they are, and you've had over a million Palestinian prisoners at different times over the period of history of Israel. And at least 200,000, the very minimum, have been actually tortured in horrible conditions in jails. Obviously, there becomes a lot of anger about that. But no one will defend that, and I will never advocate that, and I don't think that should ever be allowed, and that should be a crime for any people to do. But don't give me this holier than
that. We got to get to the top of the hour break.
You got it.
And then we'll come back.
That was
all right. Hold on, and then we're going to come back with Nick Fuentes. Okay, hold on. We'll be right back. Okay, folks, it is just about 7 o'clock Central Time. In about 20 seconds, go on speakforyourradio.com. We're going into the second hour, and make sure you check out speakforyourradio.com and all the great hosts and shows on there. We have a relatively newer host, new show right after this one, Deus Solis with Tony Trus. Nice young guy. Check him out. And let's get back to the show.
Dave, I have one technical
request. Dave, what about Nick Fuentes?
I'll answer that. I have one technical request first, because this is important since this is a video program.
Sure.
I guess there's a way for you to do this, and I would love to see my image on from the video up near the top, so I'll be looking more into the camera, because I'll see that I'm right.
Let me see if that could be done. Hold on.
Because that way I can make some better eye contact with the people out there.
Let me see, Dave. I'm trying.
All I see, by the way, I don't see you. All I see is your logo. Maybe you can go to a new logo next to it or something. I don't know. I don't know how you can do
that.
You're still the moderator, but I don't see your picture anyway.
Right. I don't know how to do it.
All we have is kind of a pulsating icon there.
Yeah. So I don't know how to do it.
If I was at the top of the screen, at least, I'd be monitoring that I'm in the proper position for the camera, and I can look people in the eye. and that would be better.
Well, let me see.
At the bottom of
layout.
The
let me see.
My camera's way at the top of the screen.
Let me see if I could.
With my poor eyes, I got to have that big screen lined it off.
Okay, let me just see if I could do something here.
Well, we can continue on. You can figure that out while I'm answering the question, if you like. So Nick Fuentes, why don't you try to figure that out while I talk about Nick Fuentes? How's that sound?
Okay.
So, again, and I know this was the question, and I did comment some about it. I don't think two people are necessarily going to agree with everything we do or every every person that I associate with or Nick associates with. I guess we could find disagreement. And I've seen this all my life, where people will get upset with people they know simply because even though they have a relationship with a person or a friendship with a person, they don't allow that person to have a friendship with somebody else that they don't like, right? Or that they think it's a mistake for them to have that kind of friendship with. So I think it's really important that we have a sense of comradeship. And some people, not many, but I think most people have recognized the fact that by accepting a few people who are supporting America First, who are actually some of the Muslims, and again, I'm no Muslim, I'm a Christian, and I want Europe to stay Christian, and I'm willing to protect our borders and to preserve our faith, just like I think Muslims have a right to preserve their faith in their countries. But it's a great thing when you have people like and Soleimani. I have some problems with some things he said, but he interviewed me for 3 hours and we talked about all these issues, and he treated me very well and I treated him well. And he's trying to work for peace, you know, between Muslims and Christians, that we don't fight each other and kill each other and try to understand and make negotiation with each other to and not that's going to cost either of us the interests of our people. But fight the people who are the death of both of us and the death of the world. And that's these Jewish extremist supremacists. And another guy that was there is Nico. I think he's half black, but I believe he's a good guy. I think he's got a good heart. And he's also supporting Nick Fuentes. In fact, the black bouncer punched out and broke out a couple of his front teeth, I think, in this violence against them, the black bouncer in the club where there was the after party from the event. And so he got his teeth knocked out for daring to support Nick Fuentes and for daring to be there. And there's nothing wrong with having allies. This is a very interconnected world today. It's interconnected. It's integrated. That's just the reality of the world. And it makes sense. It's fine for those of us who want to have our own autonomies and our own neighborhoods, our own traditions, our own nations. That's fine. Everybody's got that right. But it's really a great thing to see the whole globe, the whole non-Jewish globe, rising up and seeing the incredible danger that Jewish supremacism poses to the world. And I keep saying again and again and again to all these Arabs I talk to, and I've traveled, spoken at 20 different universities, I think, that were Islamic. But they invited me. And every one of those speeches I made there, I stood up first thing and I said, look, and I think you're honest people. I think that you certainly love your faith and your religion and your country and your way of life. And I hope you can understand, I come from a different country. I come from, you know, a European Christian nation. And I want to preserve my heritage, my religion, my values, the same that you want to preserve yours. And I hope you can respect that. And in every case that I've spoken to major, large Muslim, you know, audiences, they not only said, that's okay, no, they cheered. They stood up and cheered me because they understood what I was saying. And this is a path for us not to have eternal war, but to really have different parts of this world, and people are allowed to pursue what they want to pursue. That doesn't preclude someone from the right to defend their borders or defend their heritage or defend their people. It doesn't mean that European nations should open wide their borders any more than, you know, Turkey should open its borders to the Kurds, which the Turks are fighting, or the Kurds should not want Kurdistan or whatever, northern Iraq. But it means that every people has these desires. And but at this point in the world, we have two choices today in the world. One choice is Jewish tyranny, hegemony, and a tech power through social media and through control of Android, control of Apple and all these other major institutions, which are being policed by the ADL. We have a choice of Jewish hegemony, Jewish tyranny, and Jewish destruction of all peoples and all sovereignty and all freedoms, and even the very existence of whole peoples, like the genocided Palestinians' existence is being threatened. This is the reality that we really have in the world today. And I know in my heart, and I know from my mind, from my studies of all these decades, that the only chance Europeans have to survive is if we overthrow the Jewish extremist supremacist tyranny that's ruling over us and is determined to destroy us. The government of the United States is controlled by these Jewish supremacists, and they are working hard in every way they can to literally wipe, you know, Europeans into a minority to replace us in our own nations, of every beautiful small nation of Europe, and in the once great nation of America and Canada. They're working in every country they live in, and every global entity they have, and every global corporation they control, and every global media they control, to get us to hate ourselves, and also to weaponize and instill hatred into non-Europeans in our respective nations, to use them like the Bolshevik Jews used the proletariat, the working class, to overthrow the Tsar and to overthrow the Russian aristocrats. And I'm just telling you, folks, Russian aristocrats are a lot better rulers for you, even though you don't necessarily make that choice hardly in terms of a total choice, hegemony that way. But they're a lot better than Jews ruling over you who hate you and want to destroy you. And they did. They killed tens of millions of Russians and Ukrainians and others around the world. So that's the concept that I believe, that there's no salvation for the European people and no salvation for the Palestinian people. The reason why the Palestinians are being genocided is not simply because of Jewish supremacy, murder, and genocidal actions in Israel. These actions, if not for Jewish supremacy over the media of the world, much of it, without their supremacy and infiltration of governments both in Europe and America, and the power that America is able to exert over so much of the world, including the European world, without that power and that supremacy, there wouldn't be an Israel today. And there wouldn't be this genocide today. And the world wouldn't tolerate it. I think that's pretty obvious to almost anyone. But it's interesting.
Thank you very much for that, Dr. Duke. I just wanted to say as well, I do commend Mark Collette's characterization of you as a goat, the greatest of all time. I think that was a very astute observation on his part.
Well, it's good that you, Gahari, started the article. I disagree with him about. I certainly don't consider myself the greatest of all time. I consider myself
I was going to say that, in your opinion, like, what is it that makes Jews tick, in the sense that, do you think, like Kevin McDonald, for instance, that it's a group evolutionary strategy, or do you think that actually it's a religion-based ethnicity whereby they're able to self-identify themselves as an in-group and cast everyone else as an out-group? I realize that I'm short for time. Thank you very much, Dave Gahari, for letting me back on, and cheers, Dr. Duke, for recording us back from Qantas.
That's a very good question, and sometimes we go 2 minutes, sometimes we do more. I might need a little more time to answer adequately, but it's a question.
You got it. Okay. You got it.
This is a question that needs to be answered, though. And this is a question that all of us have got to confront at some point. Now, there are different theories about Jewish supremacy. One theory is that Jews took a different religion than most people were pagans, and they had multi-gods, and then some people had worshipped or put special emphasis on particular gods. But Jews did present a monotheism, but there were other monotheists, by the way, in the world other than Jews. Some people believe that they, in effect, had a relationship with God, or what they thought was God, and they in effect created a religion that said Jews were the best of the world, and therefore when they conquered, and they were the true people of God, and therefore they said to the people they conquered that you've got to do what we want you to do because we're the chosen of God. And we have that ticket to God, the same way that, say, an idol worshiper or a priest in a other kind of religion would say, you know, I'm connected up to that idol. I'm connected up to that God. And if you do, and I've got a hotline to that God. And if you do what I say, you're going to have good crops. And you're going to have a good harvest. And you're going to have, you know, peace. And you're going to defeat your enemies and all these other things. So some people believe that that was a device. I don't know. I think that basically Jewish supremacism basically evolved for a lot of reasons. Because in a world where you had many different groups and you wanted to dominate the groups, it makes sense for a group, in a sense, to be ethnocentric or centered on their own preservation, their own birth rates, their own reproduction. Their own genetic heritage to preserve it and the characteristics that make them, and to make laws, or social laws, or social, and what the Jews call that is halakha, laws that help keep the Jewish people to be Jewish people. And there's lots of ways to do that. One of the ways they could do that was through circumcision, because circumcision is a big, big barrier to have people converted. But if you conquer people, and this has been a problem, I think, for Europe, we've conquered many lands. And sometimes we conquered people, and then the people we conquered became part of us to the point where, because a lot of these countries were even more populous than us. And the point is that the people when we conquered became more than us and introduced into us, we changed. Our fundamental essence was changed. So Jews developed, and they realized that they could have evolutionary success this way. And they didn't think about it like evolutionary success. They thought about it like of dominance and power and influence and money and all the other influences that could make a better life for them, not necessarily better for the people around them, and certainly not a better life for most people around them, to have this ruling class of Jews. That really led them into all sorts of horrible things and slaveries and all sorts of conditions that were horrible. But it's like this evolved. And the way that Jewish structure evolved, like, for instance, the rules of Judaism, because Jews up until last century too really lived very strongly under Jewish religious laws. They're still doing it today. It may not be that only 30 or 40% of Jews in Israel actually believe in God, but Judaism is allowed to be the religion, the formal religion of the state, and they don't allow intermarriage, and they make it almost impossible, make it very difficult. It's very tiny, the intermarriage. They don't allow easy access abortion because they don't want aborted Jews. They don't really fight it very much when it comes to Palestinians having abortion. They're fine with that. They don't want their kids seeing pornography, but Jews all over the world support pornography. While Jewish elite all over the world support LGBTQism and plusism or whatever all the sicknesses that they advocate, and the destruction of the traditional marriage and family, while they do this in every country, like Jewish Hollywood's a perfect example of that, the Jewish establishment, political establishment of the world, the Jewish media of the world, in Israel, there is no legal and recognition of Jewish homosexual marriage. Isn't that interesting? And when a couple marries, they're expected to be, you know, heterosexual, and they're expected to have children. And if they break up and one of the couple turns out to be homosexual, they don't even let the children visit the homosexual parent because they don't want to influence them. Like maybe homosexuality is a good alternative for you, because then they know then that the Jewish blood, the genes, won't be reproduced. So they don't allow gay marriage. They don't even allow marriages where one of the couple goes gay to even have the kids of that union visit the gay couples. So it's just fascinating, isn't it, to see the exact opposite rules that Jews promote for every country that they live in as minorities around the world, but exact opposite worlds are what they create for their own Jewish state of Israel. It seems to me that they must realize that when a nation doesn't try to protect its family and its birthright and its borders, Israel's got one of the strictest in the world, obviously. While Israel demands every country take in refugees, in fact, look at the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the biggest pro-immigration group in the country, and they brag about the fact they were the most influential group in American change of immigration policy. Right? The same Jews that supported this with Jewish money and power and influence are the very same Jews that support Israel, which doesn't allow refugees. They get maybe one or two refugees. I mean, you can't make this up. Then they're very, very limited. So these are the kind of examples that I'm giving in the sense that it seems to me like the deceit, and I believe deceit and lies are very, very wrong. And as like Christ said, and that's why I think that quote I gave you earlier is so powerful, that ultimately, probably the source of so much evil and so much bloodshed and so much tyranny, it begins with a lie, doesn't it? Think about it. How did we get in the Iraq war? It was a big Jewish lie that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, while we went and used real weapons of mass destruction against a country that did not do a doggone thing against us, but was an enemy of Israel, to destroy that country and kill hundreds of thousands of people, ultimately probably a million people over the years of destruction. We also, under the Jewish Madeleine Albright and the Jewish State Department of our country, she was the Secretary of State, and the Jewish power, they killed 500,000 Iraqi children in the sanctions, even before the war started. 500,000 children. I just want that to sink in. I know you've heard about the Albright 60 Minutes interview before in your life. As I said so many times, I want you one more time to just go along with me for a second and just imagine walking down your street, wherever you live in America or wherever you live in the world, listen to this, Europe, Russia, South America, Asia. You're walking down the street and you see a little baby, for any reason, suffering in horrible pain, basically being strangled or sick. I know you'd do anything you could to save that baby. You'd stop whatever you were doing, whatever appointment you had. You may even not even put yourself at risk. If there was an individual hurting that child, you would probably risk your own life or your own well-being, whether you're going to be whether you're going to have eyesight or even the brain intact, you know, to try to save that child. I think most people would do it. Yet we had a Secretary of State telling us, asking, is it really worth it to kill 500,000 innocent children in Iraq because we don't like Saddam Hussein for whatever reason? Think about it. Isn't that, if that's not evil, what is? But think about the fact that was the policy in the United States, and it was a policy put in by people like Madeleine Albright and these Jewish neocons that controlled us. Jeffrey Sachs, who's a Jewish scholar and a Jewish economist, has been saying a lot of great things. And go to his website, read his article, how the same Jewish neocons who gave us the Iraq War gave us the Ukraine War. And ultimately, the same Jewish neocons who gave us the Ukraine war have given us this mass murder of Gaza and Palestinians and torture of them for the last 75 years, basically. This is real, folks. This is real life. This is the real story. Either you are moral and you're just, or you're not. And anybody that would sit back and see this genocide appearing in front of our faces every day, you know, would have got to recoil in horror about all these things. So if you're walking down the street and you see a child being raped or murdered or assaulted, Save the Children organization, global organization for helping stop starvation, sickness, nutritional deficiency, and so forth in different nations around the world that raise money for it and try to help children survive in all over the world. UNICEF also does that. And Save the Children says that 40% of the kids that Israelis have locked up in these dungeons, these prisons in Israel, have been sexually molested. This is horrendous, folks. We're not monstrous anti-Semites here. What we are, and they're really right. If they want to say that an anti-Semite is someone who is opposed to Israel or opposed to the genocide Israel's committing, if that's what they say, okay, call me an anti-Semite. And I should be an anti-Semite if that's what it means, stopping the murders of innocent children or the death of these kids or the terror, the torture, or the rape of those children or any of these other aspects of the Jewish influence in our society. I'm out of time, but I think that was a good segment. I hope it was.
It was. Thank you very much, Dr. Duke. Cheers, Dikhari. I've got more questions, but I'll let someone else speak.
We'll get you back in.
Best shows, Dave. Maybe one of our best. I don't know.
They're all great. Okay, we've got your cousin Vinny from Indiana. Vinny.
Hello, Dave and David. I want to mention, you mentioned Nick Fuentes. And I listened to him, and I listened to Ryan Dawson this week. And both of them made really similar points. They both talked about the sheer amount of Jewish money. Nick Fuentes specifically mentioned the widow of Sheldon Adelson wanting to pledge $100 million to anyone who would basically help Israel liquidate the West Bank. And Ryan Dawson mentioned that AIPAC, you know, technically they don't donate money, but they have all these other connections. They have the United Democracy Project, which is spending huge amounts of money. They spent a lot of money against Thomas Massie, who spent a ton of money against John Hostetler. But in the case of Massie, it blew up in their face. And both Nick Fuentes and Ryan Dawson said, we need to change our strategy. We can't outspend the Jews. What we need to do is make Jewish money toxic by getting people under 30, you know, to say, look, if you donate money, if you take money from Jews, we are going to oppose you. We don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. We don't care what racial group you are or religion. Jewish money makes you toxic. And, I think that is the way forward. And I wonder if you agree.
I agree 100%. And let's talk about AIPAC again, because that's what I always try to bring to the discussion, the details that a lot of people don't know and they can't talk about authoritatively, and to illustrate what we're talking about. So, as again, we've talked about this a lot. The motto of the Mossad is, by deception, thou shalt do war. That's the same kind of thing that Christ was saying, right? You are liars, fathers of the lie. And everything they do, they lie about, just like they lied about the rape of Jewish women in Israel from the October 7th, when there's not one shred of evidence, not one physical proof. And by the way, the Jewish government and the Jewish military and the Jewish hospitals and the Jewish police departments of all in that area where the raid took place, they scanned every single one of those departments. And they had them bring forward anybody that alleged any rape or witnessing any rapes. And you know what? Not a single one of those departments, not a single one could present one piece of evidence, not one witness. They didn't produce one. And the witnesses were just people that came forth through the Jewish media. It was none of them. And yet, if somebody was raped and they were hurt, they were definitely going to be reporting it. Of course. And the people that they said, the family that in the New York Times article, again, the New York. And why don't they mention the identity of the people that run the New York Times? They're Jews. They're Jewish Zionists. And yet, how can this not be mentioned when they talk about Google, when they talk about Facebook, when they talk about ABC, NBC and CBS? ABC is run by Iger, Jewish racist supremacist, pro-Israel. Right. CBS is run by the Viacom network, which is run by Redstone, which his real name was Rothstein, right? His family. All right. NBC is run by Comcast, which is run by a guy named Roberts, but his real family name is not Roberts. It's Mirsky. And they were all immigrants from Eastern Europe, just like all the three television networks were in the 1950s and 60s, which were Palinsky, Slarnoff, and Goldenson. All Jews. In fact, they all lived with a few hundred miles from each other, and they were all basically Marxist Jews. These are the people that completely controlled our television media. How can people not put that together? Yet it's the same media that tells us about Russian disinformation, Russia media interference, and the like of it. So let's go into that for a second. What is AIPAC? AIPAC is American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Now, AIPAC, the amount that they give in direct money is a tiny sliver. It's less than the tip of the iceberg. It's like a molecule on the tip of the iceberg compared to the money they control. Because AIPAC is a rich organization, have millions of dollars. What they're really spending their money on is coordinating Jewish power. What they're really doing is they're talking to the richest Jews in America, the billionaire Jewish class, and others that are very rich Jews, and they develop a donor list. They don't have to have that donor list give to AIPAC. So it doesn't even show up on the expenditures of AIPAC when they give millions of dollars to a candidate. Not at all. In fact, a good example of that is the donors to Hillary Clinton. Now, as you know, money rules politics. And by the way, if you believe in one man, one vote, if you believe in democracy, if you believe that everybody's vote should be equal, then we shouldn't have massive, huge campaign contributions, which can definitely be unfair. We should have everybody. That we should have a state-funded or a state system where everybody's allowed to have a certain amount of time, and you could say what you want. We'll give you a camera. We'll let you present a video. We'll let you present an argument. And everybody's got the same time and the same opportunity, right? And you can qualify that by just getting some signatures showing that you have a certain level of support. Maybe you couldn't have 1,000 people out there doing this, but you could have certainly a number of people in every race, and you wouldn't have a system that makes a third party impossible to win an election. That's not democracy either. You can't have certain advantages for the rich people and the rich parties and certain disadvantages for those people who are not rich. That's not democracy. And you don't have any kind of democracy. So when you have AIPAC, what you have is an organization that has got, let's put it this way, let's just give an example. I don't know exactly what the number is, but I know it's, they've probably got 1,000 billionaires. And all those billionaires will give a million. Some of those billionaires will give a few hundred thousands. Most people aren't going to give more than $25 to $100. Maybe some people, a small percentage, might give $1,000 or $2,000 if they possibly can, if they're pretty middle class or upper middle class. But you change the system here. You got that.
I figured it out. Well, I'm going to put Vinny, I'm going to put the caller next to you then. That's good?
That's perfect. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
See, now I'm looking cool. More to the people rather than looking.
Yes. And by the way, Dave,
yeah.
AIPAC just started their own PAC. So now they are a PAC.
Well, you know what? They are a PAC. And they've always given money. But what I'm saying is, here's the situation on it. Let's just take one billionaire. Let's take Mr. Bloomberg, which was so rich, he could finance his entire presidential election by himself. Easy. And outspend anybody else if he wanted to. And still not affect his standard of living one iota. Right? Mr. Bloomberg owns the Bloomberg media empire. Plus, he's got media that is going to support him as well, an enormous influence that way. And the two other major Jewish candidates in the last election were Steyer, right, and of course, Bernie Sanders. You can't make this stuff up, right? Both of them were billionaires. And by the way, the money when they get out of the race, so they're the three biggest spenders, and the ones that didn't get the the hit or the nod. Biden got the nod. He wasn't a billionaire, but Jewish money came in behind Biden big time. And 8 of 9 of the biggest contributors to Joe Biden were Jewish billionaires. Billionaires. So one billionaire, just like Sheldon Adelson's wife, he's dearly departed Sheldon Adelson, and his wife. So this Trump, if you agree that there'll be no two-state solution and that Palestine will be incorporated into the Jewish state so they can do whatever they want to, basically drive out the Palestinians, I'll give you $100 million. That's also a bribe, by the way. That should be criminal. But so one billionaire, $100 million, just one person. I think Adelson's actually gave about $200 million. In these elections to Trump, and that was just as kind of like a safety net, like an insurance policy. Now Biden, his top 10 contributors were all Jewish billionaires. So one Jewish billionaire, if I say a billionaire is a person with $1,000 million, there's a lot of people who are billionaires that are $10 billion. You could give $1 billion, right, or $2 billion. And so, of $8 billion left over, I think you could do pretty good with $8 billion living off the rest of your life. What do you think, Dave? Think you'd get along with that? Anybody out there? You think you'd get along with that?
Yeah, anyway, Dave and David?
Dave has done something here.
Yeah, no, I'm here. I'm here. I'm just.
You think you could live on $8 billion, but you could still completely control an American election for president? Can you imagine that? Is this democracy? This is the biggest fraud in the world, and it's a Jewish oligarchy, because these are Jews. 18 of the 20 biggest billionaire contributors, and the billionaires are what count, folks, because it's, those are the people who get invited to the White House. Those are the people who give a few $1 million, and then they get their friends or their associates or their family members appointed to ambassadorships around the world. And that's another interesting thing. If you look at the number of ambassadors, for instance, in my book, My Awakening, I show the ambassadors under the Clinton administration. And it was amazing because it looked like the ambassador list that Israel would have, because they weren't really ambassadors for America, they're ambassadors for Israel. Look at the three committees until Trump came in, or until the Republicans came back into the House. Look at the three committees. He still controlled the Senate. The three committees that dominated the intelligence and the foreign policy and the judiciary of the United States of America. And by the way, remember, when you talk about intelligence and wars and foreign policy, Israel has definite interests that often very much conflict with the interests of the United States of America, obviously. Right? So you had Engel, which is head of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Jewish, racist, supremacist, total supporter of Israel. And by the way, there have been no more spies for any country in the world other than Israeli spies. First, there were communist spies, during the early part of the 20th century. Then they became Zionist spies. They even stole our atomic secrets, our atomic fissionable material and everything. In fact, there was one Hollywood producer who was also one of these spies and one of these people that committed crimes against the United States of America, making Israel a nuclear power, which really threatens the whole world, by the way, now. If you ever heard of the Samson option, that's what it is. But anyway, so when you look at this, right, so you've got one Jew who's worth $10 billion could actually be the difference in an election for the president of the United States, not counting all the elections. So just a couple of Jews, billionaires, you could have more influence, more money spent by lobbies in Congress, by contributions, and you can make contributions for somebody you like, if you like them better than the other can, even if it's a slight difference, or you can make contributions very much so. Like there's $14 million now being spent against, what's the guy's name? He's an African-American that was in a mostly African-American district, which the Jews were always able to control before. And it's
Jamal Bowman.
Yeah, Jamal Bowman.
Jamal Bowman.
Yes, right, yeah, Jamal Bowman.
Yes.
And there's been more money spent in that particular seat for the Democratic nomination. Has ever been spent in a congressional district.
He's part of the squad. They want him out.
Oh, they want him out. That's right. And this is who, you know, this is the greatest. This is the greatest scandal it should be in American politics. This is not a democracy. It's an oligarchy. It is a tyranny, and it's so shocking. So you got to get this straight. It's really important for people to understand. It's not just the money that AIPAC or the PAC of AIPAC gives the candidates. They have a list of people that they've developed over the years, billionaires. They can pick up the phone, which, by the way, doesn't cost them a penny. You pick up the phone and call Mr. Schuckelberg or whatever his name is, right? Mr. Bloomberg, and say, well, man, we really need you to support this, you know, candidate. We need to get this guy to replace this anti-Semite guy or, you know, this person that's not going to put Israel first. We got to have you. We need $1 billion, or we need $1 million, or we need $500,000. And the way that they've controlled the judiciary, and by the way, the judiciary is controlled by Naylor, talked about Engel, and by the way, these were all behind the impeachment of Trump. And also the head of our House Intelligence Committee, which is a country that spied on us, like the most damaging spy in American history, the Jonathan Pollard. And we have the Intelligence Committee headed by these Jews completely loyal to Israel. They're not dual loyalty people. They have a single loyalty, and that's to the Jews. That's to the Jewish people and the state of Israel and the Jewish supremacist state of Israel.
And we need them out of our country. Well, Dave, Vinny dropped, but we got to get to the next call.
Okay, but
all right.
Close it down with a couple sentences, which is so important. When they talk about AIPAC, it's like the tip of the iceberg, because AIPAC knows who the biggest contributors are, the record of their contributions.
The tip of the menorah.
Exactly. And when they want money, unlimited money, which is not even going to be counted as AIPAC money, right? It's that individual. In fact, an individual person can make their own PAC and to give whatever they want to any candidate they want to give to, or any candidate they want to oppose to fight that candidate. So this is the greatest scandal in American history. And the idea that 2% of the population can, through its tiny percent, they're 35% of the billionaires, by the way, in America, only 2% of the population.
I think it's higher than that. I think it's like 43%.
I think that they are, but that changes. Yeah. In the world, 25% of the billionaires in the whole world are Jews. There's only 15 million Jews. It's not because they're all smarter than anybody else. It's because when you control power, any power politically, you can make or break any country. You can make and break any party. You can make or break any candidate. You can make or break any policy or any corporation. If you want to destroy, and that's why Elon Musk has become such a cuck recently. It's sad to say. I hope the man's going to be brave. I hope the guy will restore me. But he went to war against the ADL. But now he's still got me banned because I was the top man that the ADL said not to have. Maybe he'll still grow some and get me back in. I'm not saying terrible things. Everything I've said today is true. Everything I said is a real threat to America. I think people that destroy or expose and protect America and to make real democracy and real freedom from people that want to take it away from us, I think they should be honored. Not only heard, they should be promoted. But no.
Dave, these aren't good people. They're not good people.
No, they're not good people, my friend. That's for sure.
All right, we got Nick. Nick, let me put Nick in that little spot there right next to you now that I know how to do it. Nick's got a question about Matitsa Bape, I think. Right, Nick?
Well, what language is that?
I have no
idea.
It's
Kike. That's Hebrew. Kike.
Oh, it is, huh?
You're talking about Pompey, the former minister in the United States, the former government official.
Go ahead, well, Nick. What's your question about, I think it's sucking baby penises, right?
Oh, you're talking about circumcision.
No, that's
There you go. There you go, doctor. Have you seen the movie American Circumcision?
I've definitely seen parts of it. I know all about circumcision. It is a barbaric practice.
Yeah, and I just put the link into the chat.
And it's a reason why Christ said it wasn't necessary. There's a reason why the apostles said it's not circumcision. That's important. You don't need circumcision. And
Right. But and, my question is, I have a theory that the Jew, the synagogue of Satan, through his infiltration, mistranslated on purpose the Bible to bring in this circumcision. Is this a genital mutilation? What do you think?
Well, this is what I believe. And again, I'm a Christian, so I believe in the principles espoused by the Bible, and especially the New Testament, and that's the most recent scriptures. And I think they can be the most verified, whereas so much of the Old Testament was an oral tradition even before that was written down. And then later the Talmud was an oral tradition, which really got radical later on, where Jews became more radical. So like I said earlier, so when you've got these people who are very racist and very hateful toward non-Jews, they have an ability to keep what scriptures they want or affect those and take what scriptures they don't want and change them to their liking. And I'm not saying this was constant always in the Bible, but this is what I believe. I believe the teachings of Christ, which is what every Christian believes in, to me, that's the ultimate arbiter. So if I have something that seems to be a little different between the Old Testament and the New Testament in terms of policies or, you know, whatever, conduct and behaviors, I tend to say that the arbiter of this should now be Jesus Christ. I guess you are too, because you're a Christian. And that's what you're saying right now with Jesus Christ and the apostles and the teachings of the New Testament. So I would argue that the New Testament makes it really clear on a lot of these subjects. For instance, you don't need circumcision, and you don't need to be a Jew. It's not about Jews, and this is what a lot of Christians getting screwed up about. Oh, they're holy people. They're the people of God. No, there are people that disobey God, and when that whole allegiance of God to the Jews was all a covenant. If you read Deuteronomy, it's a covenant based on what? Well, you know what it is. It's based on obedience. It's based on following the word of God. It says, if you break the laws that I give you, if you break my message, if you break my spirit, I will requite you and requite you instantly. He said, if you keep my laws and keep my values, then I will watch over you for 1,000 generations. But if you break those, and Jesus Christ, I believe, was the fulfillment of God and the fulfillment of the scripture, Jews rejected that. And once they rejected that, they were no longer the chosen of God. And Jesus Christ himself makes it clear. I'll give you one example if you want to. And this is a really important point. I've been really researching this a lot. I've been knowing this since I was a teenager, but I go back and review some of these things. Are you familiar, by the way, my friend, with the story of Jesus when he went to the Samaritans? Really amazing.
The Samaritans? Story.
Samaritans, yeah. So the Samaritans, Jews viewed Samaritans as a bunch of half-breeds. But by the way, Samaritans, all the people of the Middle East were basically Europeans. The only people that weren't, the Ethiopians might have been more black. Even some of those were white. And some of the higher classes are European. They look like Europeans. The Assyrians were white. The Philistines were definitely European people. All these people were white people. They were just like different tribes, like we would say between Italians and Germans and Slavs and British or whatever, you see. But the Samaritans, anybody that wasn't what they considered to be pure Jews, even though there was mixing a lot in the Bible, by the way, and they don't talk about this much. The truth is Jews are mixed, but the difference was, as they mixed with certain other races and groups, they were endogamous about breeding among themselves. So they accented their genetic traits, and they accented that in also compounded it with their Jewish supremacist ideology of supremacy over the world, and how Gentiles were evil creatures and satanic and all this other stuff. And then this went to the peak of their Jewishness, of Judaism, which is called, the Talmud, which is what Jews have whole university. They don't have big giant university studying the Talmud 24 hours a day. No, it's the Halakha, which they study, which is the whole width and breadth of the Jewish religion. So anyway, so the Jews had a policy, and very clear in the Old Testament, you don't go near a Samaritan, because Samaritans are mixed breed. And even though they might follow the Torah, by the way, and they tried to follow the Torah, they did follow the Torah, by the way. But Jesus came with a new message, and the message was that the grace of God was for everybody, including us people of Western civilization descent, the Romans, which were white Europeans, the Greeks, who were white Europeans, right, and the other peoples of Europe. And so they were saying, okay, these people, these Samaritans, are mixed breed, and God's grace is not there. We're the superior Jews. You can't even say hello to one of those people. You can't do business with. You can't eat at the same table. You can't drink from the same wine bottle, even if you drink in separate glasses, right? Very, very strong. And Jesus came and started to absolutely violate these laws, because Jesus said, I'm going to bring my message to all of humanity, and that the chosen of God will now be those that accept my message and the salvation that I bring and the laws of God. And we're all equal in God's law. It doesn't mean we're all absolutely equal. It didn't say that. It said there were no Greeks and Romans in terms of the salvation of Christ, but they didn't ever, and no male or female. It wasn't trying to say that there are not any males and females, obviously, or there weren't Greeks and Romans and different Philistines and Jews and other groups. It was basically saying, though, that we all had the right, we were all human beings, and we should be treated fairly, and we all could get the blessings of God, and we should try to be peaceful with each other. So Christ intentionally took himself and his apostles into Samaria. And it's, which was considered unclean, horrible people, right? Even though they followed the Torah. And he goes to Jacob's well. This is the same Jacob's well that's talked about in Genesis. And Jacob's well, Jacob was the guy who supposedly was the father of all the Jewish people. He had these sons, and they all became the different, with the tribes of Israel, supposedly. Some of these tribes, well, they mixed, some of them didn't. And then there were Judeans with the lineage, which was part of the aspect of Christ coming to the world. But anyway, so in this story, Jacob came out, and he traveled into Samaria. Now, Samaria was overwhelmingly non-Jewish and by blood. And they outnumbered, the Samaritans way outnumbered them. But the Jews were trying to expand. And they came and they bought this well. This became Jacob's well. And they also bought a little bit of land. And they settled there. Samaritans, you know, had a kind of a rough relationship with them. They got along somewhat. And the Samaritans were really interested in the faith. And the Samaritans actually, where some of them had already taken up the Torah. But this is when they really took off the world. Let me tell you the story. This is an amazing story. This is all, you can check it out yourself. You can read Genesis, and you can also read the New Testament. So Christ comes to the well. Now, Jews are not supposed to talk to anything. Judeans are not supposed to even deal with Samaritans. He goes up to this well. It's run by a Samaritan woman who is not actually the best woman. She probably had five different husbands or over time. I don't know what that's all about. But he went to the woman, and he treated her with love and kindness. And he said to her, he goes to the well, and he says, I'm really thirsty. His disciples were in the village, which is a Samaritan village, getting food. And Jesus said, I'd really like a drink of water from you. And the woman said, oh my God, Lord, you're a Judean. You're not supposed to drink after us. Your people hate us. And Christ said, listen, my daughter, my friend, he says, I definitely want to share your water, and I want to share with you the salvation, the Lord God on high. I want to share with you, and I want to give you the water of understanding, the water of God, the water of love to you, right? And so they shared the water, correct? And then the disciples came back and they went into the village and they preached the gospel about what God was preaching to them. And during the conversation with the Samaritan, they were getting into a question of, see, the Samaritans, they were, and this is an interesting story, because the reason that they were, in fact, Jewish in terms of their following the Torah was because of a terrible crime that was committed against them wholly as a people that they suffered from. Because what happened was Jacob's two sons were there. These were, by the way, the same two sons of Jacob that actually sold their brother Joseph into slavery in Egypt, by the way. Nice people. You see what I'm saying about there's a lot of bad things done by Israelites or Jews in the Old Testament. The fact that something happens in the Old Testament doesn't make it necessarily right or that God approves of it. Now, maybe this happened and maybe this fulfilled a prophecy and maybe this whatever, but the fact that they did something terrible like selling your brother into slavery, that is not a good thing. The fact that Jacob, in fact, lied to his father to his face and deceived him and told him he was Esau and they wanted him blessing. And just because he gave this blessing that he suddenly became the inheritor of God, while Esau, who was a loyal son who always fulfilled his father's things, while Jacob pretended to be Esau and lied to his face, he was given the inheritance from his father. And when Esau came back, the father said, you come back, you know. And Esau said, I've been a dutiful. I brought you the venison you asked for. And he said, I wanted to give you the blessing, but I gave it to your brother by mistake. I thought he was you. And Esau cried and so forth. And it's like it's like a court of law, you know, when somebody gets out on a technicality. But anyway, so the same Jacob, right, goes into Samaria and he buys some land. And he had a nice looking daughter. And the Samaritans, the son of the Samaritan leader, really kind of was taken by the daughter. He was just fell in love with her the first time he saw her. And it says that he rolled in the hay with her, basically, that they had, sexual relations, in effect. So he does this, and of course, the brothers are real upset. The two brothers that sold Jacob or Joseph into slavery, they weren't there when they came back. And at that point, Jacob and the council of these Jews decided what they were going to do. So they were upset. They said, well, their daughter was dishonored by this other guy. Well, the guy came to them, the son of the Samaritan, along with his father, the head of the Samaritans, and said, look, yes, your son and your daughter your daughter and my son laid together, but my son loves your daughter. He wants her to be his wife. He wants to share the lineage of our families with yours. And we want to share our property with you. We want to share our lives with you. Our people want to welcome you. And we want to become part of, of God, the message of God, of the teachings of God. And you know what Jacob said? And his people, kind of like the way he fooled his father, he's told the guy and their council, he told the guys that, okay, we'll do it. We'll take you as brothers, and we'll give our sons to your daughters and your daughters to our sons. Now, by the way, they're not big racial differences here, but they're just, they're going to be kind to each other. Well, I'm almost finished, but I got to finish this one little
thing. Well, we only got 2 minutes left, Dave, so we got to wrap it up.
This is a really major story, which gives a whole sense of everything. Right.
We can pick it up in the after show.
Well, no, we got to finish it. Right? Let me finish. Give me 30, okay. 40 seconds.
Okay, go.
No, I'll have it done. Okay. Go. So listen to this. So he says, okay, we'll do it. We'll take you as brothers and sisters. And you'll worship the Torah. Yes, you agree to that. You swear to do it. And we will allow you. But you have to agree to be circumcised. Now, circumcision for an adult male is a big deal, right? You were talking about the molehill earlier, my friend, the gentleman that was on with me. It's a big deal, and especially in those days with their dull knives and their infections and their molehill using their mouth on the person's private parts. I mean, it's amazing. And people, when an adult was circumcised, often sometimes they die and the infection, sometimes they lose their whole reproductive organs. And sometimes that they would die because of the infections and the sickness, and they were weak for days, right? So they came out of the gates, according, this is all in the New Testament.
Dave, we got to cut it short.
They came out of the gates, okay, and they were circumcised. While they were sick in bed, these Jews, Judeans, came in and they massacred all the Samaritans. And then they gave, this is, they were told that they could take the women and the children as their booty. So they were allowed to rape and take the women and the little girls, you know, for themselves. I mean, basically pedophilia, right?
Okay, and that's
what
it.
What Jesus was doing is Jesus was trying to correct this wrong that was done to them and saying to them, you're all part of the kingdom of God now, and we look at you all as equals. Isn't that an amazing story? That kind of illustrates the difference between the Old and New Testament, doesn't
thanks,
it?
Thanks, Nick. We'll see you in the after show. Sure. Dave, thank you. Listen, we're not going to be here next week, like I said. Something else is going to play. We don't know what. Jim Rizzoli is probably being discharged tomorrow. A lot of folks had asked me.
Oh, thank God.
You know, Dave, where can folks hear you this week?
Look, I'm going to be on the radio tomorrow morning at rinseradio.com. You can also find me and my archives and everything at daviddukes.com. You can also find me at Odyssey. At Real David Duke is my handle, at Real David Duke. You can also find me on Gab at Real David Duke. And folks, you're going to hear a lot more today live in the morning going all out over the world. Please join my show, listen to it, spread it. And this show was an amazing show. I hope you share it with all your friends, all your relatives. I think there's so much good message in this show that help us understand the world as it really is and help us understand the real nature of Jewish supremacism and what we're facing in this world and the threat it is to the entire world, especially the Palestinians right at this minute, but also to all of us. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, folks, for tuning in. And Dave has been obviously in the spotlight lately. I've been getting a lot of emails, calls, letters. If you want to support Dave, reach out to me. Go to the Money Tree Publishing website, hit the contact tab, and let me know, and I can arrange something.
You want to try to offer somebody some like evening with David Duke or something if they want to.
Exactly, right. That's what they're asking for.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.